Well, good evening, everyone. Are you guys ready for us? You guys ready? Okay. Well, welcome, everybody, to the hard-to-believe October 2nd board meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome everybody that's here. The board did meet in closed session, and we discussed three student personnel items, stipulated expulsion hearings, which we'll discuss in a moment. We discussed item number 3.04, a complaint against an employee, and 3.05, anticipated litigation. Board, do we have a consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay, good. So let's move on to item 4.03, which is action on a stipulated student discipline agreement. So we are now going to have a roll call vote on student disciplinary matter number 3.01, which was reviewed in closed session. Would someone like to make a motion on that?
I'll move approval of the
recommendation.
Yeah. And I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the recommendation by the district administration. Mrs. Campbell, this will be a roll call vote.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
No.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Motion carries 5, 1 no, and 1 absent. Move on to item number 4.04, action on stipulated student discipline, and that would be student number 3.02. Would someone like to make a motion to approve the recommendation of the administration?
I move approval of the recommendation of the administration.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mrs. Campbell?
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes. Motion carries 6-0 with one absence. Item 4.05, again, action on a student disciplinary item. We're now going to have a vote on the disciplinary number 3.03, which was reviewed in closed session. Would someone like to make a motion for that?
I move the acceptance of the administration's recommendation.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry and a second by Mrs. Roger for the student disciplinary action. Mrs. Campbell?
Mr. Quesenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes. Motion carries 6-0 with one absence. Moving to item 4.06, approval of the minutes for September 18th. Would someone like to make a motion on that? Moved by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. I'll second that. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Item 5.01, student representative to the board.
Okay. So, hi. I feel like it's been a while since we last met. But so a lot has happened, but our biggest thing this month is definitely homecoming week this week. So our theme this year is homecoming for the ages, so it's decades. And this year, Executive Council decided to switch homecoming up a quite. So instead of having our typical floats and our parade downtown, we decided to get rid of those. And instead, we decided to decorate hallways. So this weekend on Saturday, we all came in from 8 to 5 and decorated all our four main hallways in the main building. And they look really good. If you guys get a chance to walk through them for some reason, I highly recommend it. It's honestly like a really good decision that I personally think we made. And along with that, I think it was able to integrate more of our students together since we're actually able to see our themes out throughout the week instead of just having the float just for like 5 minutes at the end. So that was a huge change. And then along with that, we decided to make our homecoming court more equal in a way, in the sense that we made it so that anyone could win. So we eliminated the gender roles of having a king and a queen, and instead we're having whoever gets the most votes. So actually this year our junior representatives are two males, and it's Greg Tom and Christian Clegg. So we definitely think it's a step in the right direction, and we're super excited to see how the halftime show goes on Friday. So, yeah. And then along with it being homecoming week, we had a little thing today. I'm sure you guys, like, obviously know about it, but about the email. So, like, I just want to reiterate the fact that all of, like, the staff made the students feel super comfortable, and there wasn't any, like, panic. Like, Mr. O'Connor went on to our daily announcements and addressed the issue super quickly and, like, really, like, made sure that we were safe. So it was a day, and it's going to be a really good homecoming week. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And remember, as always, well, first of all, are there any questions from the board?
Yeah.
Well, Jen, just sure. As always, you're welcome to stay and participate in any discussion we have and actually cast an advisory vote if you'd like to do that. Mm-hmm. But we also understand that you may have things that you'd like to do or things that are pressing at home. Yeah, getting ready for homecoming, for example.
May I just say one thing about what we just heard?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
I just want to say congratulations. It's so hard to change conventional wisdom. And you were very, as a school, you were very brave and flexible about
it. Yeah, it's been a debate about, like, the homecoming, the homecoming parade has been a debate a lot over the years because we've been putting a lot of effort into something that we don't really see, like, pays off. So we thought that the hallways would really, like, make that change. And along with the court, too, like, we think it's definitely the correct, like, step and, like, the right direction. So, like, we're super excited that all of Slough High was on board with it, or most of Slough High, I'd say. Like, yeah.
That's really exciting. Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. So item 5.02, Proclamation of Appreciation for Central Coast Dental Society, and I see this is going to be presented by Dr. Prater, and let's see, I'm looking for Dr. Lynn Scott.
He says, one moment, please.
Uh-oh, we're going to wait for just a sec.
He's parking his car.
Okay. All right.
We sure
can. So let's go on. We'll wait on this. Actually, which is pretty cool because I'm pretty excited about the dental screening information. But let's move on to 5.03, and that would be the Hawthorne School Program highlights. And Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. I'd like to introduce Mr. McMillan, Ms. Sancho, and Mr. Kuhn, and they're going to introduce their wonderful students from Hawthorne Elementary and tell us a little bit about their community service project.
Great. Well, welcome. Thank you. Again, thank you all for coming on behalf of the board.
Good evening, board members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to come here.
And come on up and feel free to just go over there and take pictures if you like or anything like that. Come on. You can come over here. It's okay.
Oh, okay. They're going to deal with tech issues.
Just scoot on over there and get in a place where you can see. We're totally good with that.
Okay, now I got to start with a funny story.
We're making you start again.
Yeah. Before these students graciously agreed to give up their evening and the parents agreed to bring them here, the students had a lot of questions about what this would entail. You know, in addition to the public speaking, the vision they had in their heads was one of two. Either it was that you were on a glass-lit stage like Simon Cowell for America's Got Talent with X's above you. Or I imagine more of like a traditional colonial type of slanted podium where you guys sit actually above us in your realm of power intimidating
we left
fashion.
The powdered wigs.
Yeah, that's right.
Home this evening.
So I was happy to say, as you are demonstrating right now, that you couldn't be more kind and caring. And I do, before we start, want to thank you for your continued strong and caring leadership of our wonderful district. This is my fourth year being principal at Hawthorne Elementary, my fifth year as an administrator. It's flown by, and I'm just more excited with the challenges and successes that I see daily happen at our school and all of the schools in our district. So thank you very much. When Dr. Prater asked all principals at the beginning of the year to be prepared to be called upon to present one special, unique, or amazing, awesome thing about your school, my first thought was, just one? And then my second thought was immediately what we're about to present to you. And I have an amazing team of sixth grade teachers now. It's the team that you dream of if you're an elementary school principal, because sixth grade is such a critical transitional year. They're not middle schoolers yet, but they're starting to realize they will be very soon. And with great power comes great responsibility. When I interviewed Mr. Kewen, I actually didn't interview on the panel to hire him for my school. I was on an interview panel for a different school, and another principal was able to hire him. But I distinctly remember that he mentioned in his interview, the part of the questions where you say, do you have any questions for us? I distinctly remember him saying, what opportunities are there for teachers to, basically, I'll summarize, go above and beyond? How can we get the kids more involved? He started appealing toward potential, Saturday activities and things like that. And we're all looking like, who is this guy? He's hired. And of course, he did get hired. And then I got to be the principal of the school that he got hired at. So we have an amazing team. And this summer, as has followed with much of their work, they came to me and they kind of said, we want to do even more for our sixth graders and have them earn the special privileges that they well deserve at the end of the year or the middle of the year or beginning of the year, one of them being our sixth grade camp. We take great pride in being able to fund every student being able to attend camp at our school through vigorous fundraising and other things. And then they wanted to go above and beyond. They wanted to take our sixth graders to the water park, either in Paso or in South County, because there are some other schools that offer their sixth graders to do that. How can we do that, they asked, And with that, they also said, and we want to be able to instill throughout the year a sense of ownership and a sense of earning the privileges that we graciously provide for our students. How can we do that? So we kind of thought about it. And then they also collaborated with our school counselor. And she happened to kind of have a memory, a strike. She started a program at her former school that she worked at that was exactly this. It was a community service project that wasn't required. It was just firmly recommended that enabled the students to earn some of their privileges. And so she asked, she said, what do you think? Why don't we require 10 hours half the year, 10 hours the second half of the year? And with an equitable mindset, be able to provide anyone the opportunity to complete the hours at school or go above and beyond. And of course, what you're going to hear is the above and beyond part, because here we are just starting, and I'm just really inspired by what these students have to say. So these are uncoached by me, their own words. The only words that I provided them with was, please start by saying, hello, school board. And everything else that you hear is their own words from their own heart. So without further ado, Zani Jones.
Hello, school board. My name is Zani Jones. I've been going to Hawthorne since the beginning of the year. For my community service, I have done the beach cleanup with my friend Garrett. I am thankful to be able to help my new community and become a better friend with Natalia, Garrett, and Eric. I love living close to the beach and hope to continue to help it. This has made me think of other things I could do. For example, help keeping slow parks clean. Thank you.
Thank you. Yay.
This is Eric Hernandez.
Hello, school board. My name is Eric Hernandez. I've been going to Hawthorne since preschool. And for my community service, I've helped teachers and our school custodian. And I went with my dad to the beach cleanup. And I think it was very fun to be cleaning with my dad at the beach. I think it's important to earn our trips because this gives me an idea of what a real job is, and that we have to earn our privileges. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Miss Natalia Reyes.
Hello, school board. My name is Natalia Reyes. I have been going to Hawthorne since fourth grade. For my community service, I have been helping out in Miss Croc's room and at my apartment complex. Miss Croc was my brother's fifth grade teacher. I am very grateful to be helping her and her wonderful students. I am also helping in my apartment complex to get more hours, such as cleaning, sweeping, and mopping. There is also a room in the learning center in my apartment complex, and from 3:30 to 4:30 it's homework time, and from 4:30 to 6 it's free play. I help out younger kids with homework if they need help. This experience of community service is making me want to do more community service on my free time.
Thank you. I just want to interject. I hope that you consider becoming a teacher after you graduate.
Mr. Garrett Platter Rath.
High School Board, my name is Garrett Platter Rath. I've been going to Hawthorne Elementary ever since the third grade. I went to the coastal cleanup with my friend Zani. Also, Natalia and Eric went to the coastal cleanup. When I went to the coastal cleanup, it made me realize that helping our city helps us make us more healthy. I'm also looking forward to hear more ideas from my classmates. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And as of this last Friday, I present to you our newly elected Student Council President, Brooklyn Rogers.
Okay, let's do this. Hi, school board. My name is Brooklyn Rogers, and I've been going to Hawthorne since first grade. I love how the students and faculty like to give back to the community, and I think that doing volunteer work is a great way to earn our camp and field trips and to prepare us for the real world. Some things I've done for volunteer works so far include helping the faculty after school, setting up chairs for an assembly, and picking up trash around the city. I think that doing community service is a great way to earn our fun times at Hawthorne, and other schools should do it too. And a little side note, the coastal cleanup wasn't something that we had to do, but lots of the students at our school chose to do it, and I think that's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
So as you can see, it's been a month of school, and these students were some of many that were fired up about this, and they went above and beyond. Again, we don't want to exclude anyone and make a hardship on anyone, and we're finding the exact opposite is true. The students and the families at our school are wanting to spend their free time giving back to our community. So thank you so much for that ovation. Do you have any questions?
Don't go away. Yeah. Board members, do you have questions or comments? Mr. Quisenberry.
Not a question here, just it's really wonderful, and I'm just so impressed with the sixth graders and their poise at the microphone and how well they speak, and it's just great. I think you're doing a fantastic job, all of you folks. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Quisenberry.
And I would just add that one of the things that's always impressed me about Hawthorne is the sense of community that you have as a school, and fighting for your school and making it right for all the kids that go to school there. You guys epitomize what we would like to see, the connection between our schools and our community to be. So thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to the teachers, too. You guys, you guys really, you know, we know how hard you work, and we really appreciate that you're able to give to the students. Thank you so much.
Yeah. The above and beyond hours that these two and many on our staff put in is it's just really inspiring, and it's hard, and sometimes it wears us down, and then we realize why it's worth it. So I do applaud the teachers, and thank you for the opportunity to show our students, our future citizens of this community, what this is all about. It was really cool for them to be able to practice public speaking, but also learn about our school's governorship. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Now let's go back to item 5.02. I believe Mrs. Geyer, and you'll be introducing Dr. Brack Linscott. Is that correct?
Yes.
And before you start, I have to tell you guys a story before we get started. So as you may or may not know, I know, but I was a special education teacher. I was a speech pathologist, and I worked at several school districts in San Luis Obispo County, including one that had some significant poverty. As a speech pathologist, I did sometimes oral exams on kids, right? And one of the saddest experiences I had at the time, and this would have been probably 25, 26 years ago, was looking in a child's mouth and seeing a black hole where there should have been a tooth, and knowing the pain that this child must have been experiencing, and the work that we had to do in those days to try to get them dental care. So we just on that note, I appreciate what you did. And Mrs. Geyer, if you could talk a little bit about the phenomenal work that we're seeing here.
Yes. Well, the Central Coast Dental Society has been supporting the dental health of our students for longer than I've been here, which is almost 20 years. And they screen students in our school and other districts in the county. And out of that, we refer to parents, those who have dental needs. And over the course of time, we've been able to work closely with the Dental Society to optimize the care that kids receive after we identify their problems.
And as a result of those screenings, we have the opportunity to refer children to Give Kids a Smile, which is a collaborative of the dentists in the county. Kids go there on our referral based on the screenings that they've done. And just a snapshot, just in one Give Kids a Smile office, the one in San Luis Obispo, Doctors Kopp, Barbieri, Roberts, and the Tolosa Children's Dental Center came together. There were 37 volunteers, dental professional volunteers, 12 of them were dentists, who volunteered their entire Saturday to serve 50 children in our district and other surroundings, but probably 32 of them were ours, to the tune of over $26,000 that were donated in services. So what a great collaborative between the Central Coast Dental Society and our school district and the school districts in our county.
Dr. Brock Linscott is the chairman of the Dental Health Committee, and he keeps stats. He collects statistics from all of the districts. And so just for last year, they screened between all the districts 10,672 kids, 9,035 passed without problem, 1,300 were had an issue, and 336 of them, or 3% of them, had an emergency type of referral needed. And in San Luis Obispo School District, we had 1,617 kids screened total, 1,413 passed, that's 87%, which is great. 167 or 10% of them had issues, and 37 children had emergency needs. So,
well, thank you very much.
Brock Linscott.
Hello, school board. Thank you for inviting me here. And it's nice to represent the Central Coast Dental Society. We've been doing these school screenings for over 40 years. And we recently honored the school nurses for all the tireless work that they do, because they organize with the parents and the students and the teachers, getting into the multipurpose room and sequencing all the children to go through there. The last 3 years, we've screened over 10,000 students per year throughout San Luis Obispo County and Santa Maria. So it's been a real big undertaking, and as many of you have done volunteer work, you know how it is to round up cats. It's kind of like that sometimes, but we all want to do the right thing and help our children to improve their health care. And as you pointed out, Mr. Unger, when children are in pain and they have a toothache or an abscess, they can't concentrate. They can't study. They're not going to be able to enjoy all the pleasures of our education system. So it's really important for us to do what we can for the children and make sure that they get the dental care that they need. And we're very fortunate. We have a lot of very generous volunteer dentists that are happy to do the dental work to help the children to be good students. So thank you again for all your volunteering as well.
Thank you. And I'd like to read the proclamation to you, and then I'd like to present it to you on behalf of the board. So this is a proclamation of appreciation to the Central Coast Dental Society. Whereas the Central Coast Dental Society has provided volunteer dentists to our elementary schools for annual dental screenings for all students in kindergarten, grades 3 and grade 5, as well as students with dental concerns in other grades referred by staff. Whereas the Central Coast Dental Society has completed the oral health assessment screening paperwork for kindergarten and grade 1 students who did not provide the paperwork as required by the district to meet AR 5141.32 oral health assessment requirement. Whereas the Central Coast Dental Society has hosted the Give Kids a Smile clinics in the spring and has coordinated with the Public Health Department and school nurses countywide to see students with limited or no dental resources, many of whom are referred from the school dental screenings and has been hosted by Dr. Kopp and Dr. Barbieri's offices. Mm-hmm. Now, therefore, we express our gratitude and appreciation for their tireless effort to support our schools and students. Presented this second day of October 2018 with deep appreciation from the trustees of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District and the district administration. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you, Tyler of British Sports Cars. He's got me to the meeting. My car ran out of oil coming down the Quest of Grade.
No.
So I did everything I could to get over here, and Tyler made it happen. So thank you, Tyler.
Thank you, yeah. Okay. Item 6.01, correspondence. The board did not receive official correspondence through the office. However, the board did receive an email from Becky McFarland concerning seagulls at Morro Bay High School. We'll move on to item 6.02, public comment. And just a reminder about the public comment protocol. First of all, let me pull it up here, that anyone wishing to speak to the board may, either as an individual or representative of any group, to assist me, if you would stand to be recognized, give your name, your group, if any, that you're representing. We would appreciate the presentation being as brief as possible. The time limit for each presentation will be 3 minutes. Total comment time will be 20 minutes. Materials related to the board may be distributed to the board, and speakers may use a district-supplied document camera to display materials. Distribution and display of materials may not extend the allotted time, and members of the public may not use district electronic devices or cameras other than the document camera. Questions asked by the public shall, when possible, be answered by the president or referred to staff members present for reply. Questions requiring investigation shall be referred to the board or administrative staff for study and response at a future meeting. The board will not take action on any item introduced during public comment, as this would constitute an illegal act on the part of the board. A speaker may offer criticism of school operations and programs that may concern them, but in public session, the board will not hear personal complaints of school personnel or complaints against any employee of the system other channels provide for board consideration and disposition of complaints involving individuals. Is there anyone that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, we'll move on to item number 7.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a few quick things. So on the Siegel front, I will let the board know, and I am that we've been hard at work, the maintenance staff, in terms of really cleaning up the campus now that the birds have left. You know, the nesting period is over, those types of things. So we've definitely made a remarkable change in terms of the campus there, which has been our focus. There's still some work to be done. Mr. Bond and myself were there this morning, actually, walking the campus and putting together kind of a short now list of kind of the last things we need to do. And we welcome the rain coming forward here in the next few days as well with that situation. But definitely the Falconer services at the high school have made a remarkable change in terms of the number of seagulls on the campus. You'll notice an informational item at the bottom of the board agenda, which is our GASB, our OPEB, our other post-employment benefits. And so kudos to Julie Lang for working with our actuarial team to put that information together. Some highlights for that are basically that the actuarial total amount has come down significantly, so $1.5 million from what it was at our last actuarial time period. So definitely a big reduction. That can be attributed to two things. One would be that our health rates, though gone up significantly, haven't gone up really significantly over the past few years, and so that plays into it, as well as the former census that they used to do when they would put these numbers together didn't account for some of our employees who do not receive those benefits in retirement. So that's been taken out. We do have a reduction of individuals in our district in terms of working that we've made over the past few years. So that's also been a smaller part of it. But the good news is we've actually closed the gap in terms of our OPEB actuarial study. And so, you know, we'd love to fully fund that here in the future if we can. So it definitely helps us in many ways. And I think those are my two key things. Thank you.
Item 7.02, Educational Services Update.
Yes, just a quick update on the disturbing emails that a teacher received at Laguna and one at SLO High School. So we did inform you that these were determined to be unsubstantiated threats by both the school staff as well as the SLO Police Department, and did have good news that thanks to technology, a 14-year-old girl in Tennessee was found and arrested for the incident. So it's a good reminder that things follow you in technology, and we need to be cautious about how we utilize that and do so in a respectful, kind manner, because obviously our words can be found. So unfortunately, this was an incident, but kudos to the staff at both schools for ensuring that the students were understanding of the situation and that we're safe, and took extra precautions with administrative presence as well as police presence to ensure that it was handled with an abundance of caution. Some great things to celebrate. So Senate Bill 1090 that we have been updating, seems like for a long time now, did receive a governor's signature, and we are proud to say that that will be an enormous benefit to our entire community and will really allow just a bridge, a transition for our school district to be able to adjust to the loss that will come from the loss of Diablo. That part does not change for us, but it does at least allow us a transition to be able to deal with that without a cliff that we're having to face. Also, additional fantastic news that we heard was a big congratulations to Teach Elementary School. So Teach Elementary School was designated as an exemplary high-performing school, National Blue Ribbon School for 2018 from the U.S. Secretary of Education. And listen to this, one of only 349 schools in the entire nation, one of 12 schools in California. So big congratulations to the students, staff, families, and administration of Teach Elementary, and we'll be excited to celebrate with them.
Very excited.
That is all. Thank you.
Okay. 7.03 Measure D update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes, on the Measure D front, we Measure D is officially hit, like I've talked about before. I mean, we have a lot of projects happening, both the Morro Bay High School, San Luis Obispo High School, and the next 3 years, phasing plans are being put together. And, you know, again, kudos to Mr. Bonin and his staff, as well as to Acme Construction and working all of this out. We are going to be looking at our next bond sale So I am in talking with Mr. Isom now, because we do have about a 3-year kind of last 2022 in terms of finishing all of our projects. So that's something we want to we want to put together. So that will be in a future board meeting here soon. I've also met with Mr. Bonin and as well as Mr. Simpson in terms of our deferred maintenance plan. So as part of our next bond study session, we'll be reviewing kind of, again, going back over the current status of budgets for Measure D, as well as kind of a picture into deferred maintenance and long-term needs for our campuses and schools that kind of correspond with our deferred maintenance budget as well as bond projects. So that'll be something we'll, be reviewing at the next Measure D study session.
Okay. Yes, of course.
I just want to comment on some of Mr. Bonin's staff. And I want him to bring this message back to Steve Stewart. I really appreciate his efforts in answering some questions I've had and directing some information to our neighbors here close to the San Luis campus. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Pinkerton, going back to your previous item about Morro Bay High School and the pigeon issue.
Mm-hmm. Seagulls? Yeah.
Gulls.
Oh, I beg your pardon, the seagull issue.
Yes.
Pigeons. The seagull issue.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This seems to be a sort of a changed circumstance. I mean, there's always been a problem in the quad with some pigeon.
Seagulls.
We get it.
I know I'm from Los Osos. How can I not know? Seagull, know that they have been an issue, but they have become a much larger issue. And so I'm wondering, will it just become part of the general maintenance plan at Morro Bay High School going forward that we will have the falconer and we'll be addressing?
Yeah. Well, over the past, again, I think 3 years now. Where, 3 years ago, it was kind of an issue with a lot of nesting. We noticed it. We kind of cleaned up after the nesting season was over. You know, it was kind of, more than normal, kind of smell, some issues like that. And
was it after we lost the trees?
What's that?
Was it after that big storm and we lost the trees?
Was that before that. So it was before that. And then and then this year, we tried to hit it. So we actually had our pool person that was still had halftime of his position. So he was actually going up trying to stop the nesting, stop the birds from, kind of staying. But there was just it was so overwhelming with the number of birds on the campus. So I don't know if it was, some type of a ecological change, nature aspect of it that drew birds to Morro Bay High School to nest. Maybe there's some other place that was no longer available for them, and so they tied into it. I don't know what that is. But definitely, after this year and what happened, and really a health hazard. I mean, it almost becomes a health hazard to that extent. Absolutely. That we waited till after the nesting season was over, which is the tough part, right? Because you have to wait. You can't just go up and disturb the nest once the eggs are there, once the birds are there. So we had to wait till that season was over to begin to let, once the birds can fly and they have all of their correct feathers and all those things that happen, right? So once they're gone, then we were able to bring the falconer back, get the birds off of the campus, and now that's been our cleaning efforts. So my goal is to keep that falconer going throughout the next nesting season so they do not nest on the campus. So that hopefully we can make some type of a impact, so that they're going to other places to nest, basically. So that's the hope.
So through the next nesting season for sure.
Yes.
And then you'll make
we'll see how it goes
going forward.
Yeah, I don't know that there's any precise answer. I mean, we've tried strobe lights, we've tried noisemakers, we've tried drones, we've tried strings over the things. We've put up kind of spiky spikes all over the outside of the roofs where. It was really interesting in Morro Bay High. One of the roofs is a rock roof, no seagulls. Other roofs had, tons of seagulls everywhere. So we're looking at that. We've called the Monterey Bay Aquarium to ask them how they. I mean, this has been kind of an ongoing effort, but really, to date, the only thing that keeps seagulls away is that falconer. So that has been the one thing that has worked. Until something happens or some major change that we see, I think it's in our best interest and the interest of our kids and staff that we keep it going.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to item number 8.01, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. This is a public hearing. Mr. Mayfield.
Good evening. Let's see here, my notes. Education code requires that the board determine a sufficiency of textbooks in the core subject areas of math, science, history, social studies, and English language arts, including an ELD component. I can tell you that I've received confirmation from all schools, and the district is currently sufficient in all areas. At this time, we just need to hold a public hearing, and the board will be asked to look at a resolution at the October 16th meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I will open the public hearing for item 8.01, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Move on to item number 9.01, integrated pest management program. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so the board knows, and they received several complaints over the past few months in regards to the use of Roundup on our campuses. It's actually a concern that's dated back for several years now that people have brought up. And so it was an item that definitely the board wanted to hear more about, wanted to know a little bit more about the history, as well as what is our current use and plan when it comes to pesticide use, or in this case, our integrated pest management plan. So I have two individuals that are going to come up and speak to the board. One is Mike Bruffy from SIPE. And SIPE is an organization, a JPA, a Joint Powers Agreement, where all the districts in the county got together and kind of helped fund this group that assists us with all of our workers' comp issues and problems that we have. But more than that, right, they are the ones that we go to in terms of any safety or concerns that we have. If there's asbestos potentially on campus, and putting together an integrated pest management plan. So anything like that that we need help with, they are there. And so that said, I'm going to have Mr. Bruffy come up and just give the board a little history about Manzano and glyphosate and all the, you know, kind of the issues surrounding it. And then I'm going to have Mr. Bonin, our director of facilities, come up and just talk about what is our current use, what is our current plan, what is happening with it, and then definitely answer any questions that the board would have in regards to those. So if we can, we'll have Mike kind of give his presentation, then the board can ask questions of Mike, and then Chris will come up and ask questions if that's okay.
Great.
All right?
Okay.
Mr. Bruffy.
Good evening, board. Thanks for allowing me to speak for a few minutes here. Okay, so everybody knows that glyphosate or the herbicide Roundup is a hot topic right now. Several years ago, the group known as the International Agency for Research on Cancer had a meeting with all their experts, and what they determined was that glyphosate is actually what they would consider a probable human carcinogen, okay? The United States EPA has a different viewpoint. So for many years, glyphosate has been around since 1974. For many years, the EPA has felt that it was a less hazard to humans. So back in 1985, they considered it to be a group C, which is on the scale of A to E, kind of in the middle. So they weren't quite sure. In 1991, they brought it down to a group E, which is not likely to be a carcinogen. So since then, they have held that that is correct in their mind. Recently, in 2017, they also reevaluated glyphosate. Okay, and what they've come up with is that it remains a group E-type chemical in their mind. So what we have is two groups that see it completely different. The International Agency for Research on Cancer consists of 26 countries, and what they do is they meet for 8 days at certain points during the year to discuss certain chemicals. And so the 17 experts in their field get together and discuss all the published information that's out there. And from that, they came up with that determination that it should be a group, what they call group 2B, probable human carcinogen. And something important to note is that they say there is limited evidence of carcinogenicity in humans for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And that's the cancer that we're talking about when people claim that they're getting cancer from glyphosate. It's NHL or non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Studies are mostly done from agricultural exposure in the United States and Canada and Sweden as well. They also say convincing evidence that glyphosate can cause cancer in laboratory animals. So based on those two things, they were kind of drawn toward that group 2B classification. Group A is at the top of the list, and that's known human carcinogens. So a lot of those chemicals, if you saw the list, you would recognize those. So that kind of brings us to where we're at now as far as litigation that's going on. So in 2015, that came down the pike, and what happened is litigants started coming forward pretty quickly. And right now it's hard to say how many people out there that are filing suits, but at least 5,000 or more people are actively filing suits. But there is one in particular that we've been focusing on this year. An individual named Dwayne Johnson from Benicia Unified worked in agriculture before that, worked as a grounds person, applied herbicides, mainly glyphosate, or Roundup as we know it, to the school grounds and said he got doused many times with it. And what happened to him is he came down with non-Hodgkin lymphoma, so bad that his case was kind of fast-forwarded. And so in June of this year, the trial began, and in August, it was determined by the jury that they felt that Monsanto did not properly warn him and that they felt that glyphosate also contributed to his non-Hodgkin lymphoma. So they awarded him $289 million. So that was a big deal, and it kind of set alarms off all over. There's a lot more trials and jury trials coming up in the next year. But what that has done really is kind of made everybody ask themselves, wow, should we be using this? Should we be using it at home? Should we be using it at schools and parks and around cities and places like that? The answer, you know, is not easy, of course. But there are groups, there are school districts, there are cities, there are countries that are looking at banning it from using it at their sites. If I could just quickly read from the California Department of Pesticide Regulation school IPM program. Senior environmental scientist sent SIPA a letter, because we were asking, okay, now what do we do? And so his response is, at this time, I'm not aware of any change in regulations for schools regarding glyphosate. Under the Healthy Schools Act, glyphosate products are allowed to be used on school sites according to the product label and the Healthy Schools Act training, notification, posting, reporting requirements. Our program has and currently is searching for economical, viable, effective alternatives for vegetation control for schools across the state. For many years, glyphosate has been the active ingredient of choice. There is no one management technique that can be used in place of glyphosate products. However, a combination of cultural, mechanical, and physical controls can be tailored to the local environment if staff and budgets allow. So they outline a few ways that you can attack these weeds, but of course they're not as effective as glyphosate. So he finally finishes up by saying there are many herbicides which rely on different active ingredients or different application techniques. These include alternative conventional herbicides, pre-emergent selective herbicides, and organic certified products, which may come at a higher cost, require more frequent applications. So good IPM policies often include regular rotation of active ingredients to prevent pesticide resistance. So that leaves us trying to figure out, well, what do we do? I'm not here to tell the board or the district what they should be doing, but trying to give Chris and Ryan some ideas of what other school districts are doing and try to find ways to try and maybe lessen the amount of glyphosate that's used on campuses. So there are some alternatives. Again, not all of them are perfect. They require more work, more labor, but those alternatives are out there. So anyway, what I want to say is that as long as your school district is following the Healthy Schools Act requirements, which they are, as long as they do their training, the CDPR training, which they do, and also do their required annual pesticide handler training, which I do that training for you guys for free. Of course, SIPE does that. As long as they do that annually, you guys are well within compliance of using glyphosate on your properties or on your sites. So the alternatives are many. Again, some of them are very, you know, biologically safe, and some of them are still chemicals for the most part, but a lot of them just burn down the weeds, and it doesn't get to the roots like glyphosate does. So anyway, I kind of shortened it up a little bit for you. I wanted to kind of not take a lot of time, but wanted to kind of give you an overview of where we're at and where a lot of school districts are on this.
Okay, great. Thank you. So
questions?
Yeah, Mike, if you could just hang for a minute, and then I think the board probably has questions for you. Chris, I don't know, were you going to add anything?
Do you want to do Chris first and then ask questions all together? Okay,
Why don't we have Chris come up, and then we'll ask questions of you guys. Thank you.
So, again, I want Mike, to kind of give you the background, information, general types of things. Right. Now, okay, what do we do in San Luis Coastal? What's that look like for us, right? So I'm going to have Chris kind of share that with the board.
Good evening. First, what I want to do is just share some facts with you. So I put together a few numbers. You add up all our sites, we have 12 million square feet, which equals 273 acres. There's 8 groundsmen. It's 32 acres per groundsman to take care of. Out of that, what we're spraying right now is just perimeters at every site, which comes to 60,000 linear feet. So put that in perspective, it's 0.5% that we're spraying out of our whole district. Now I'll walk through what we do and how the process when we do spray. We spray approximately 2 times a year, every site. Some of the reasons we're spraying would be fire prevention, protecting native plants, allergies, rodents, protecting our recreation areas and our parking lots and sidewalks because weeds grow in the cracks and make it worse, to prevent tripping hazards. When do we spray? We spray Saturdays only or when there's no students on campus at all. What's our current procedure? Notice to the school 3 days prior to spraying. Signs go up 24 hours before we spray. They leave them up for 72 hours after. They start on Saturday at 6 a.m. and they're usually completed by 8 a.m. They don't leave the site until the chemicals dry. And every time they spray, we track it and then we submit that to the county at the end of the year. As far as the employees and training, like Mr. Bruffy said, SIPE does our annual training. All the grounds employees are trained for applicating Roundup. They're trained on their protective gear, what to wear, when to wear it. They're trained on how to store the chemical. They're trained on transporting the chemical, and they're trained on disposal of the chemical. That's just kind of the process that we go through.
Thank you.
So okay. I'll add to that. You know, we used to spray a lot more area. So in other years, blacktops around fields, around campuses inside the internal part of the campus as well. So since this has become an issue over the past few months, we've had all of our grounds people. We only currently right now the only place we spray or use this product is just on the perimeters. So that's one thing we have done just to start right now. I am in contact with Irvine School District, as well as kind of calling around, heard from Benicia, from Dr. Prater recently. So trying to see what are the alternatives, right? So already trying to take some steps in terms of are there other alternatives that we can use instead of Roundup, even on our perimeter properties. So that's kind of the backdrop for the board in terms of the history, what our current practices, what's happening. And so kind of open it up to questions for any of us that we can answer for you.
Great. I'd like to go to the public first, if there's anybody from the public that would like to talk to us about this. And seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Dr. Eisendrath-Roger, looks like you have your light on first, then Mr. Quisenberry.
I appreciate that we push the contaminated area away from the children to the perimeters. I understand why that has been our practice. But now that we have the knowledge that we have, I wonder if we can come up with some other solutions because we still have the exposure, of course, to our workers and also to our neighbors where school property abuts to a neighbor's property. So I feel like we have that responsibility. And I'm wondering why not just weed whack on those perimeters?
You can weed whack, but it grows back. So if it rains a lot, it grows even faster, but that's also more labor. Spraying kills it, you move on, rain, weather, it just keeps growing. So we would need more labor to keep up with what we're trying to maintain now.
So it's currently twice a year per site. So I think they do once in the fall and then once in the kind of the spring, summertime is when they actually apply the product. So it's not all year round, you know, types of things. It's those two times of the year when they try to kind of hit it hard, you know, before the summertime and all the fire hazards, those types of things happen. So we do a ton of weeding. So that is definitely something we do throughout, because even sometimes the dead weeds, you still have to weed eat them. But that's just the current practice. So it's just a quicker, efficient way of doing it. So, but it doesn't mean that you can't do it a different way.
I'm just wondering if we could possibly maybe identify how many linear feet we're talking about that actually contacts other people's residences. That would be useful to have, and maybe just consider those properties.
Sure.
Mr. Quisenberry.
So,
Mrs. Sheffer.
Mr. Bonin, you mentioned that the records of when and where things are sprayed are kept with the county, or do we keep them on site here also?
We keep them on site here also.
But someone could go to the county and find those as well. Okay, thank you.
By law, we have to turn those in each year. So that's it's part of the...
That's part of the Healthy Schools Act, where they have to do an annual report by January 30th every year of all their spraying activity. That goes up to the school IPM program, and they document all that. And they keep track of it, and if you don't send something, they give you a phone call. So
we get a nice little phone call. Yeah. That's a requirement. Thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer.
So I'd like to make a couple of points, I think. First of all, I do think this is I'd like us to explore in depth the alternatives and bring back to the board cost in hard costs, what the alternatives are, what their risk benefits are, what kind of additional labor costs might be involved in that. I am concerned about this, and I think that San Luis Coastal in the past has shown, we've shown ourselves to be leaders in when we see that perhaps something is going to be coming down, or, you know, we try and be proactive about it and do the right thing. I, as Dr. Eisendrath Rogers mentioned, I am concerned about our workers. As many know, I'm a cancer survivor myself. I look at this in terms of the hell that is involved in going through a serious illness, and would not wish that on anybody, especially as we obtain more information. I'm not particularly convinced because the, not to be too political, but the current EPA has changed a standard, does not have much, carry much weight with me right now. I am very concerned. I'm just interested in what the alternatives are. I know there are alternatives. I understand that another piece with the weed whacking is because it's my understanding, because many of the weeds are close to the fences, that it's difficult to, you know, you can't run a weed whacker where it's going to, the string is going to bump up against the fence necessarily. It makes it hard.
The fence issue plus the park lots up there.
Yes.
You know, we spray the weeds and you got, you know,
so I'd just like to know that, you know, I'm not completely writing this off, but I kind of feel like the writing is on the wall and that we should be as proactive as we can, do our homework, see what's out there, see what the alternatives are and what the cost would be in terms of labor costs and product cost.
Okay.
So I'd appreciate getting additional information. I'm
absolutely
one person if the board would agree with that.
Mark or Marilyn?
Yeah, I agree with that too. I would like to see additional information brought back. As you mentioned, we know that several school districts, Irvine, for example, Benicia, I believe there are probably other school districts that are looking for alternatives as well, and I think it's important for us to be able to be aware of what those are. So I would ask that that this be brought back to the board. What would you be thinking, Dr. Prater or Mr. Pinkerton, first of the year?
Yeah, we were talking about we anticipated this. So we think if we had the first of the year,
okay,
a January report,
okay,
back to the board.
So and I think it's a report that would be made in public, and I'd like to hear that back so the public could have time to comment on that as well.
That's a good point.
So everybody's okay with that?
Yeah, and I would just add, as Mrs. Roger just pointed out in a sidebar, that there would not be any spraying occurring between now and then anyways, most likely. Is that correct?
Not necessarily true. I mean, I can hold off if you want me to hold off.
Well, how critical, tell me more about the potential spraying that you think you might need to do between now and when you report back to the board.
It's more of a regular maintenance routine. So they're trying to kill the weeds before they come again, because if they let them get out of hand, they get too big, too hard, too weed whack, and it doubles the time on trying to get them back down.
It's supposed to be a rainy season.
Yeah.
Well, we're hopefully getting some rain tonight. You know, my preference is that we wait. I think I'd like to see us wait on before we apply any more. And I realize that it could cause more work in the future, and I think that's a risk that we need to take. And I'm willing to ask that we not apply any pesticide until we get the next report back. And I don't know how the rest of the board feels about that. Or use an alternative.
Okay.
I don't know, but I need to see what the rest of the board feels like. Well, yeah, I just like to see. Well, we don't need to make a motion on it. I don't believe we need a motion. But I just would like, I think this is it. Mr. Bonin asked us an important question, and I think the board needs to agree. Either we allow application between now and the report back to the board in January, or we say let's hold off until we get the report back, knowing that it could potentially cause greater work for the groundskeepers.
You know, we also could, in that meantime, try organic items that are out, like testing, and still work on that report for you.
Okay. Everybody good with that?
Okay, yeah.
Mrs. Roger?
We've had parent concerns expressed to us over the last 18 months or so prior to the Benicia judgment, and we don't use Roundup at our own home because we have concerns about it. So I am concerned about the possible effects for students and staff, and I would be in favor of holding off, trying something alternative in the interim if you can.
I have no problem doing that.
Some kind of a pre-emergent thing, anticipating the rains, and then come back to us in January. That'd be great.
Okay. So this is a discussion item. It looks like the board is in consensus that we'd like you to hold off on the use of Roundup, but try alternative methods and continue to contact other school districts and other agencies to see what they're doing, and then report back to the board in January. Oh, Catherine, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to ask if it would be possible for you to do any kind of collection of scientific data that would show us, you know, like if you use the herbal, like how fast does it grow? If there's any opportunity to do that between now and January, that would be.
There's actually a ton of studies. I mean, we've been investigating this whole, you know, kind of the alternatives part of. There's a ton of different things that are options out there that we'll get and look at that have a lot of that data in terms of they you know, this isn't anything new. People have tried to be environmentally sensitive in terms of weed, you know, herbicides, those types of things. So we have some of those. We'll try them. We'll go out there. I will tell the board this. The perimeters were the only thing right now that we were focused on in terms of it, and trying to keep it away from students and staff and those types of things in the middle. But there's a whole greater in the conversation with Mr. Brett. You know, there's a whole – this issue goes way beyond just weeds. So this issue of the use of the product and into our actually food supply and food staple right around you know, the actual growing of fruits and vegetables and those types of things and cows so this issue is a bigger issue, I think, than even, you know, our little weed spraying in terms of the perimeter. But we should start it, right? We should start to use those other items. So we'll definitely take that board direction and start trying those other means. But good to know.
We have to start where we have control.
Absolutely. But just for everyone to know who's out there listening, you know, this is a greater issue, right, in terms of trying to stop the use of this potential product.
All I was going to add was just if we could just do kind of a sampling of using a different herbicide at one school and what a different herbicide,
we'll,
you know, so we can see what's going to work best if we go that route. Thanks. Yeah.
So we trust you guys to figure this out and
we
come back to a re- come back in January with a report to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Thanks for coming out. Haven't seen you in a while. Good to see you.
We're very fortunate to have SIPE. I mean, I will say, in terms of training our workers and the service they provide our district is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So we're very fortunate. And they are kind of the leading group, I mean, in terms of throughout the state and our all of our safety training. And we actually, our SIPE owns the kind of safety training modules that all other districts, a lot of other districts tie in and go through. So thank you again for being here.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Item 9.02, A to G profile, and Mr. Mayfield.
Okay, well, again, I'm here to share our A to G completion rates from our two comprehensive high schools for last year's seniors. The intent of the AG subject requirements is to ensure that students have attained a body of general knowledge that will provide breadth and perspective to new, more advanced study. Our district goal is for students to remain eligible for college after graduation in order to open doors for students and to ensure a rigorous and challenging program. This graphic here shows that in order for high school students in California to be eligible for UCCSU schools, the following requirements need to be met: 2 years of history, four years of English, 3 years of math, though 4 years is recommended, 2 years of laboratory science, though three is recommended, 2 years of foreign language with a 3-year recommendation, one of visual performing arts, VAPA, and one of college prep elected. So we're going to look first at the results from Morro Bay High School. And what we see at Morro Bay High School is over the last 3 years, there's been a slow, steady increase in the A to G percentages met. This is of the overall seniors at Morro Bay High School. And in the last school year, 64% of the students met those requirements. If we look at the subgroups for Morro Bay High School, at the top we have 190 graduating seniors. 64% of those students met the A to G requirement. Of the 123 non-SED students at Morro Bay High School, 72% met the requirements. Of the 67 SED students, about half, 50%. There were just 3 EL students in the graduating senior class, and one of those completed the requirements. Of the 28 RFEP students, 39 completed, and of the students with disabilities, approximately 22% completed A to G requirements. If we look at a 3-year model of what each subgroup did, we can see that of the non-SED students, about 15% growth over 3 years. SED students, approximately 11%. EL, 33%. RFEP has been hovering about 40% over the 3 years, up and down, a little jump there. And then students with disability have improved 16 percentage points over a 3-year span. If we go to San Luis Obispo High School, we see that San Luis Obispo has plateaued at about 70% over the last 3 years. A little higher rate, but it has been plateaued for the last 3 years. If we look at the individual subgroups of the 318 graduating seniors, about 69% met the A to G requirements. With the non-SED students, approximately 78%. SED students, 43%. None of the 6 EL students made the requirements. Of the 39 RFEP students, 44% made the requirements, and students with disabilities, approximately 7%. This graph shows that over the last 3 years, the students' percentage rate for A to G completion remained at about 70, as I mentioned before. The non-SED rate has stayed the same at about 78%, with a bump in the middle year there. The percentage of socioeconomically disadvantaged students increased over 3 years from 41 to 43, again with that same bump. English learners remained flat at 0, and RFIP decreased from 48% to 44%. So in conclusion, we see growth at Morro Bay up to 64%, whereas at San Luis Obispo, we have a plateau at about 70%. There was growth in non-SED and SED at Morro Bay High. We didn't see that growth in subgroups at San Luis Obispo High School. At Morro Bay High School, we noted that RFEP students needs deeper understanding and attention. I copied off all of the students' records and delivered those to the high school, and we've had some really great discussions about, you know, what this data means and what we can do with steps moving forward. And at San Luis Obispo High School, the SED group appeared to us to need a little bit more deeper understanding. And I've learned a lot about A to G requirements, I can tell you, over the last month in those discussions with high school staff and the principals. It's a complicated issue, and there's a lot of stories there behind why students don't meet A to G requirements. You know, if a student gets a D or an F in their last semester and they don't intend to go on to a four-year college, you know, they might say, well, you know, I'm not gonna make that up. It doesn't matter if I'm A to G compliant. You know, I'm just going to, my plan is to go to Cuesta College, and, you know, that happens. There, like I said, there were a lot of stories there. While Morro Bay High has grown to 64%, San Luis Obispo has plateaued around 70. Both schools have areas of A to G completion rates to focus on. Both schools are analyzing individual student data, including specific subgroups, and then intentional steps are being taken to address these issues. For me, this is, you know, part of the equity conversation and overturning these rocks and looking carefully at why our students are meeting or are not meeting A to G requirements, and then taking actions to help them to be successful. Some of the things we've talked about in the last couple weeks are at SLO High School, they review each student's transcripts who did not meet A to G. And as I said, I copied those transcripts off, walked them down to the staff. And as I walked into the conference room in Mr. O'Connor's conference room, they were there talking about the issue. And I sat down. We had a great conversation about, you know, what this means and how we're going to help these students in the future. We've had discussions on EL and RFEP and SED and students with disabilities with the staff. Mr. O'Connor brought it up at TCT just yesterday, Monday morning, and had a discussion of, you know, what do these numbers mean, and what can we do in the future. We've also got a program called WISE from the Templeton School District, Winning Intervention for Student Excellence. And that's not our program, and it has just begun, but it's to help identify freshman students with D's and F's and get some interventions in place immediately. And we'll see how that bears out in the future. At Morro Bay High School, they've been tracking D and F rates of students at each of the four grading periods and discussing those results with department chairs. They've been looking at the specific transcripts of RFEP students. That was the group that I sent out to Morro Bay High School with their counselors and discussing their systems that they use to track the A to G eligible with seniors. They've been continuing to see growth and strength in their AVID program, and that's contributed to their growth over time. And they're ensuring that all course offerings offered at Morro Bay High School are A to G compliant. We've actually made a lot of leaps and bounds in that regard in the last several years. The courses need to be sent to the UC Regents for approval for A to G requirements. But the goal is for all of our courses to be A to G compliant, of course. And then they've been using a co-teaching model for students with disabilities and pushing a teacher into the classroom to help with the regular classroom teacher to ensure that students with disabilities have those opportunities as well. Okay. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Sheffer, Mr. Buffman.
I'm not very happy about some of these differences in scores, and I'm curious in looking at the conclusions about a couple of things. You indicate for Morro Bay that RFEP needs deeper understanding and attention, and it's SLO High, no growth in subgroups, and the SED group needs deeper understanding and attention. And then the last one is intentional steps are being taken to continue to improve AG completion rates. So my question is, what does all this look like? I understand that RFEP needs deeper understanding and attention. What will that look like? And same for SED, and are you able to give some examples of intentional steps being taken that will lead to greater success for our students?
The first thing you got to do is sit down and talk about it and look at the transcripts and to see why it is that students haven't achieved the A to G rates. And I think that's the stage that we're at now. You know, this is new to me stepping mm-hmm. into this role, so I'm just beginning to have those conversations with staff. And as I mentioned, I've learned a lot about A to G rates over the last 3 weeks because I've spent some time talking to both principals and staff members at the schools to begin the conversation of why are these numbers what they are and what steps can we take to, you know, ensure that these students are successful. So what I can tell you is that I will be involved in those conversations. We'll be meeting on regular intervals to review this information and, you know, the things that are mentioned in the board report, and I'd be happy to forward my notes to you that has the specifics of what San Luis Obispo High intends to do and what Morro Bay High intends to do moving forward. But we have to have those conversations first before we can decide what steps actually need to be taken.
Okay, I'll be curious to also learn about what our teachers may need in terms of professional development or additional sure. training, or with the equity question, how to really do strong outreach to include more of our students,
yeah.
And how to get more students in those classrooms, but also with the underpinning of helping the students with what they need, if it's
exactly.
additional time or tutoring or mentoring or whatever, you know, that comes back to the board in terms of, you know, the finances, but also what can we do
sure.
to what can we put in place to help more of our students achieve A through G.
So. Yeah. I was down at the high school this morning and talking to Mr. Frost. We were just out on duty watching the students come in, and I commented to him that as an elementary person coming to the secondary level, I feel this urgency that we need to start talking about these things at a much earlier stage.
Right.
You know, we need to have these conversations with students in junior high and really even in fifth and sixth grades about, hey, you need to be setting yourself up. And while we do spend some time talking about it, I think it needs to be, as you mentioned, more intentional and more specific about here's what's going to be required of you, and you need to be prepared and ready,
yeah,
ready for that.
Thank you for that. I mean, the high school builds on what occurred at the junior high, at
yeah.
middle school, and then it's all building blocks.
Yeah.
They all...
And as I mentioned, there's so many stories and reasons why. You know,
right.
if a student with a disability has an IEP, and if a course is modified within that IEP, then it doesn't count for A to G, you know, graduation rates. So
that's right.
there's just, it's just complex how many different
and
stories.
And I don't mean to discount the complexity at
sure,
all.
Of
it's
course.
more figuring out what those complexities are, and then coming up with a game plan to
exactly.
to address them appropriately. So thank you.
We'll be overturning those rocks.
That's right.
A close look.
That's right. It's not always pretty, but it needs to be done.
Absolutely.
So
it
thank
does.
You.
Yeah. You bet.
Hey, Rick.
Mr. Buckman.
So on your first slide, where it's the A to G requirements.
Yes.
And I just want to first of all, I just want to be clear. One of the reasons we focus on A to G is because these are classes that make those students qualified for attendance at UC and CSU.
Correct.
Okay. And so, if I remember the sequence correctly, it was K-12 that started to put an emphasis on CTE classes, and we describe K-12 now as college and career ready. And
correct.
Then we changed our graduation requirements to include CTE classes you can either do the VAPA or the CTE, and then that's carried on now to the UC-CSU acceptance
yes,
of those requirements.
The CTE arts, media, and entertainment standards are very similar to the VAPA standards, and we're trying to get all of our CTE courses to be A to G approved.
Okay. So on this chart, eventually we'll start putting
here.
Eventually we'll start putting CTE here as well as VAPA.
Correct.
Okay, because I think that just would be helpful.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay. And
we've seen over the past few years an increase each year in A to G. I think you just mentioned it. You'd like all the CTE classes to be A through G.
That would be ideal, yeah.
Thanks.
Really, ideally, all of our courses would be A to G compliant where possible.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be great.
Right?
And I just want to fully support the comments of Ellen Shepard, because we've got some work to do, and I know we're going to dig in and do it, but it's clear that it was just a great presentation that was given last year about kids tend to start out at different places, and then as they go through. So when we have, I think it's in almost both of the districts, we have a 10 or 30% increase in passage of A to G, but that doesn't catch the kids up. It just marches them through at the same level.
Yeah.
So I totally support Mrs. Shepherd's comments.
Early intervention, I think, is really critical. And identifying those eighth graders, you know, leaving our middle schools and moving on to the high schools and honing in on those students right away in ninth grade and helping them to be successful is critical.
Well, this chart is very informative. I just want to point out that our seniors or our graduates will have 3 years of history, social science, which would be, you know, U.S. history, some kind of world history and cultures, and a U.S. government and economics classes. So that's a requirement. English, of course, is 4 years for graduation. Mathematics is 2, and of course, you said the CSU and the UC system would like 3 years of math, mm-hmm. and so
they recommend 4. Actually, they
require probably 4 now. Right. Yeah,
right.
Okay. Language is kind of lumped in our graduation requirements. Correct me if I'm wrong with fine arts and applied arts. Is that correct? Okay. So I just, you know, it's focusing, I think, too, also on whether kids master those things with a has to be a C or better, correctly?
Yep, that is correct.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we have graduates requirements that would include these things for students in order for them to graduate, although they could pass courses with a D and therefore not qualify through the A through G. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And that's a factor that we need to look at, yeah. Mr. Quisenberry. Absolutely.
I'm pursuing a theory of the plateauing effect at Slo High School, and I wonder if this could have anything to do with it. So I'm looking at the notion, well, we know, the CTE program at Slo High School is very successful, and it can lead to a student graduate from high school and getting a very good job and not going on to college. And so I wonder if the fact that we have that other pathway that could be chosen, could that be an explanation for the plateauing effect of what's going on with the A through G courses?
Yeah,
what do you think?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that question. I can say that we are looking to push students to be both career and technical, you know, complete a pathway, as well as be A to G compliant. We've looked at that data as well to see, you know, how many of our students have completed a pathway, which would be a series of courses in CTE, and are A to G compliant, because that would be ideal, really. It would give them some skills and ability to go on, as you said, and get a job, but also give them the option to go on to a four-year university if they so choose. And that's, I think, also something that has to begin. We have to begin to push that down into the middle school and even into the elementary schools and begin talking to students. In the study I've done on CTE, they say you can't start early enough, that when you take kindergartners on a field trip to wherever it is you go, you say, look, boys and girls, this is a job that, you know, in the future that you could have when you visit the fire station or the police station, that type of thing.
So. Or it gives you the opportunity to get a job right out of high school and maybe later on in life go on and get your college
right.
degree.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know a young man from a former Pacheco student who took some welding courses at San Luis Obispo High. I believe he completed a pathway. And, you know, before he went on to college, he got a job welding, which pays quite a bit more than minimum wage. Yeah.
And I actually think that this discussion and these figures are more important than the AP discussion we had. I think the AP discussion was important, and clearly students who are completing the AP courses, assuming that they're following a well-counseled pathway, are completing their A to G requirements as well. But these are classes that are not AP classes that still will lead to college for students. I appreciate that you guys are working on this. I think that this is a critical issue for our school district. It's a critical issue for equity, and it's a critical issue driving what happens in the high school, as you say, driving what happens in the junior high school, middle school, sorry, and probably driving what happens in the elementary schools, because if we're saying one of the reasons kids aren't completing A to G requirements, and I think we should look at, you might want to consider looking at, what percentages of kids almost get there. You know, I mean, it's either you pass or you fail. You either do it or you don't do it. How close are you, you know? What got you to 80%, but you didn't do that other 20%? Right. That would be kind of an interesting thing to know. And as far as the school board, I believe this is going to drive some of our LCAP plans and our goals and objectives. Where are we putting our money, and are we putting in our, you know, how are we doing on this? I for one, would not like to see this be the end of the discussion on A to G requirements. And I would like to get a report in the spring, perhaps, after we settle some of these issues, after we have more information about what our students are doing, what we can be doing better, what targeted interventions the high schools are doing in order to encourage and increase the number of A to G participants. And so I don't know if my fellow board members would support me on that, but that's something I would certainly like to see.
I'd be happy to share that information.
I don't know. Does the rest of the board support that?
Sure.
Yeah, follow up? Okay.
One of the things we discussed was the difficulty in specific courses. So Algebra 2 and Chemistry tend to give students a tough time. I don't know how your chemistry skills are, but I know I would have a difficult time in that class. And chemistry was moved from the junior year to the sophomore year. And many of the chemistry staff feel that students really need that higher level of mathematics in order to be successful in chemistry. So, you know, those are great discussions. Like, well, okay, then what can we do to equip those students to be successful in chemistry, and what support can we give those students moving forward?
And I think that is going to be critical. What are we doing in classes, understanding that these are hard things? I mean, chemistry is hard. Physics is hard, you know. It requires intense amounts of mathematics. What are we doing to integrate all of these things together so that our students can be successful? What are we doing in the classrooms to help students be successful and to be able to get through the A to G requirements? Anybody else, Mark?
Yeah,
and
thanks,
then Jim.
Chris. I'm going to go back to the ROP days, and one of the things at some conference, there was a gentleman up at the state at California Department of Education, and I know sometimes it looks like we're struggling to find A to G CTE classes. And it just comes to me now that even back then, there were 3,000 already approved courses that were, in those days, but they were ROP, but they now CTE classes that had already been designated as A to G compliant. So I just throw that out to you. Somewhere they're out there. So hopefully we're not trying to create them ourselves.
No.
Thanks.
Jim,
thank you.
Well, my comment is on the requirement for foreign language. I think that I would be personally interested. I don't know if the rest of the board members would. The number of students who don't take a foreign language and therefore don't complete that portion of their A through G requirement.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, also, I guess just something else to chew on. I'm reflecting back on my son, who did not complete A to G requirements, but he was a musician. And so he took music classes until the cows came home, did not take the A to G requirements, knowing that he was going to go to a music conservatory. And so, you know, we want everybody to complete that, but I wonder about some of those other circumstances, some of those things that are causing kids to maybe make decisions that are saying, I don't need this because I'm going to do this.
Right.
So I think those might be interesting data points too.
And how do you pitch that
so that we tell kids, listen, you want to have a rigorous, broad education when you leave here, and even if you're not intending to go to four-year university, being ADG compliant is a good idea.
Exactly. When you're making music, you're using physics.
Yep.
You know. Okay. Anything else on this topic? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayfield. I appreciate it. Item 9.03, Dr. Prater, this is board priority focus area number 3, engagement.
You know, if I could have put a time capsule and gone backwards maybe 5, 6, 7 years and listened to our conversations and then move it forward to where we are tonight and just listening and observing this conversation, I think you'd be blown away. I think the evolution of board discussion around assessment and meaningful data has made a significant shift. And it's shifting in the right direction. When Mr. Mayfield responded to your question, Mrs. Sheffer, about, well, what's the specific plan? And his response was, we need to really talk about what it is that this really means. From my vantage point, the A through G, which is why we're talking about it tonight, the A through G data is the ultimate equity conversation. Because when you look at it, in our district, the non-SED student population is completing their A through G requirements to the tune of almost 8 out of 10 students. Now, as I said to you back in 2010, and I still believe it today, that particular group I still think is underachieving. I still think we can make greater inroads there. But we're making progress, nevertheless. The groups that concern me the most in the A through G analysis have to do with our targeted populations, our socioeconomically disadvantaged subgroup is achieving A through G at around 4 to 4.5 students out of 10. Now, why is that significant? Well, that's significant because that's an opportunity gap. Those are academic skills that particular subgroup of students need that they're not getting. It's a difference between taking, and this is just my belief, that we're beginning this trajectory by discussing, and I've had this discussion with Dr. Pruitt and Mr. O'Connor. And the more we talk about possible reasons, once we get beyond the defensiveness, which is just a normal and natural human reaction when you're working really hard, you say, but here's why. That's not in our control. Well, you see, those are defensive responses. A more honest and more inquisitive response is, well, let's examine this. Let's look more carefully. So to answer Mr. Unger's question that he raised to the board, do we want to revisit this? I absolutely insist that we revisit this because it's not just A through G. A through G just really begins to tell the story about our systems, our structures, how we follow kids. Are we explicit enough with all kids? Because we know that not all kids go home to the same types of supports that can help kids understand and articulate why they need to get a C or better in that class, even though it's really difficult. Because the difference between the C and the D is the difference between getting into a university in our state and not. And I will argue that the more we pick those rocks up and look underneath, I think we'd be surprised that the types of things that we can do, which of course the board will be a part of that conversation, will be enlightening, because it's not rocket science. It's just we just haven't explored it. We just haven't looked at it and given it real careful thought. We are well intentioned. We're starting to move in this direction, but we just haven't asked the right questions, and we haven't picked up enough rocks to begin to say, oh. So Mr. Mayfield mentioned, yeah, we need to start this in elementary and middle, and I agree. we have adopted this new counseling or this new program that allows kids. It's called CCGI, and we're going to have a presentation on that this year. And it's a wonderful program that allows parents and students to lay out a four-year plan for their high school that allows them to get from point A to point B when they finish and graduate. Well, I believe, and we're on our way, that we need to start educating students and parents in sixth grade, seventh grade, and really building their capacity to understand why these things are important. We know the students who are going to struggle in chemistry when they're in sixth grade. We know this. We know who's going to struggle in English 9 and 11. We know who's going to have a real tough time with Algebra 2. And my thinking is, in middle school, that's our opportunity to really start harnessing that support and articulating with families and students and staff so that when they move on to the high school, our high school staff is really well prepared to support the students in ways that we have not really done before. I'm not saying our high school teachers aren't working their tails off, because they are, but I just don't think they're using the right tools. We're not really giving our kids and our teachers and the system a careful analysis on how to maximize our success story. So I firmly believe we can bump our SED and RFEP, SED and RFEP subgroups. I really believe we can bump those to the 70% level, A through G, within a few years. I really believe this. It's about intentionality and really strategic supports. I also believe our students with disabilities are way underachieving with regard to A through G. And I talked to Diane Frost about this, and we concur that part of it is that co-teaching model, that we need to expand that and expand the level of intentional support, making sure not all kids, but more kids, more and more kids, year after year, are encouraged to take A through G courses with a co-teaching model, which would really give them the access they need. And that's how, if I were to look at this in a five-year context, I believe we're going to, in 5 years, be having a much richer and more detailed conversation. So my presentation tonight segues into that, which is about a different kind of assessment. And that different kind of assessment has to do with engaging our community and our stakeholders around similar topics. Equity. What is it that we're doing that's working? What is it that's still creating barriers for our kids across all those subgroups? And I just want to highlight some things with you. I know you already know about these things, but I'm here tonight because I want to illustrate the things that we're doing so we can bring definition to them. So tonight I want to highlight just a few of our structures that have to do with making sure that our local control accountability plan is as robust and rich and detailed as possible. I don't believe we're going to get a perfect model anytime soon, but I'm telling you, every year we're getting better and better and better because of this level of engagement. What I have up here on the screen is the second year of our Common Ground Advisory Task Force. And again, I'll remind the board that the purpose of this advisory task force has to do with taking very challenging topics that have to do with equity, have to do with First Amendment, have to do with those things that really, I believe, get in the way of success for all kids, safety, inclusion, inclusive schools, and we're going to tackle it. So this group is made up of a broad range of very different types of thinkers and believers, religious leaders that come from different places, and we have come together and formed this quite interesting group that Each of these members, of 25 members of this group in our community and on our staff, this group, they have strong yet very diverse opinions. And I wanted to highlight for you, without going into too much detail, what we intend to do this year. So we're going to meet for our first time in November. And we're just going to review the agreements we had from last year. But I want to bring you down kind of quickly. So in January, my intention is to bring a student panel forward to this board, sorry, to this committee, and we're going to talk about equity and inclusivity, because I think it deserves more discussion, especially when I bring student panel members there that believe in maybe have different viewpoints. And we're going to engage this student panel. We're going to ask them tough questions, and we're going to ask them to illuminate us on what their perspective on equity and inclusivity means in our schools. And in February, and then following each of these panels, this Common Ground group will come together and actually work in small groups and report out their key learnings of what they heard. In February, we're going to have a teacher panel that I'll just reach out to certain teachers who I feel come from different backgrounds and have different skill sets and experiences. It might be a special education teacher. It might be an English language teacher. It might be a math teacher. It might be a special day class instructor. And we're going to have them talk to us, too, about their view of equity and inclusivity, allowing this group and committee to integrate thinking and feedback. In March, we're going to have the Student Senate representatives come and share out their recommendations for the following year and the key learnings they've had. In April, we're going to have a student and club advisor panel. So these will be students at the high school who are belonging to clubs who represent different groups along with their advisors. And we're going to fill that room up and talk again about equity and inclusivity from that vantage point. And then our district equity team that Mr. Mayfield has put together, and we have great representation on that committee. That district equity team rep panel will come and discuss what they've learned and in the year and the things they'd like to see our district do. The A through G discussion will feed into this. So the recommendations coming out of this will lead right back to the board, naturally. Okay? Then we'll have a year in review in June, and I will bring their recommendations to the board. Okay? And they'll get folded into the LCAP too. Okay? So, Luana, could you bring up the Student Senate for me? This other group I would like to highlight is the Student Senate. And we had our first meeting this last week, and it was, I thought, an excellent first round. It was about 55 to 60 students representing middle and high school across our district, and again, a very diverse group of students. And in this group, we introduced the concept of Youth Truth again, and we refined Youth Truth, the survey, to align with the California Healthy Kids Survey so that we can have a common discussion around common themes. The students will administer this survey to their peers at middle and high school, and we're shooting for an 85 to 90% participation rate this year. And so we had a great first meeting, and in October we're going to meet again, and we're going to talk about equity and civil dialogue and why that's important. The local control accountability plan, as well as district structures. I want the whole group, all the groups that I meet with, I want them to understand what it is we're trying to do. In December, we're going to have Saatchi come out and meet with us to review the California Healthy Kids Survey and the Youth Truth data. Prior to that, on November 15th, we have a board study session dedicated to California Healthy Kids Survey, Youth Truth, and how it integrates and what it all means. And you'll be the first to see that data and be able to engage and talk about it, okay? This will then feed back into the Youth Truth. In January, we're going to have special guests come and speak with the students, but give them time to begin to develop their LCAP goals, or sorry, their recommendations, which can go back to the sites for feedback. The principals will be asked to identify teacher leaders to join us during this time to begin to identify ways to highlight and prioritize the things their peer group are saying. And they'll start designing SMART goals. This will then come back to the board, and you'll have the opportunity to provide feedback to the students as well. Then in March, we'll have final recommendations for the LCAP and the single plans for student achievement, and we'll consider next steps. In April, the group will meet with me, and I'm going to seek their feedback for the following year on how we can make it more meaningful and more purposeful. That's 55 to 60 students that were selected by our administrative group from each of the sites that represent the range of students in their schools, meeting with us 7 times this year. Okay? All right. That's the second engagement structure. The third engagement structure is the district equity team. The district equity team was put together by Mr. Mayfield, myself, along with our cabinet team, and it represents a broad swath of teachers, classified, certificated administrators, and board members. We have Mrs. Roger and Mr. Buckman participating on that team, and our district equity team, the purpose of it is to begin that very important conversation, and I'll guarantee you A through G, the report you saw tonight, will be a topic at our next meeting for the district equity team. And my guess is they're going to ask the same questions you asked, and we're going to start digging deeper. This district equity team's job, role, is to provide the superintendent and the board with specific suggestions as to how to best address those issues and move forward. So it's not Eric Prater making suggestions to the board. This is a very broad range of constituents seeing the same data you're seeing and saying, here's what we think should happen to improve that. Okay? That's the third engagement structure. The fourth engagement structure is the LCAP advisory team. Now, I didn't highlight these. I will move through this. The LCAP advisory team is still being formed. It will be composed per ed code of mostly Title I, the majority, effectively parent representation, parent reps of our economically disadvantaged youth. And so this group's role is to look at our goals in the LCAP and provide feedback as to ensure that what comes before you reflects a focus on the needs of our most disadvantaged and vulnerable populations. Okay? I will feed the feedback that I get from Student Senate, the Common Ground Group, and the District Equity Team through this group once we start developing goals. Okay? In addition, we have our DLAC, which meets, I believe, 5 or 6 times a year. Mr. Mayfield will run that group, and it represents, as you know, ELAC leadership reps from each of our school sites. They compose and make up the District English Language Advisory Council, and that group has a heavy role in making recommendations and reviewing the LCAP as well. And then I meet every month with our parent leader group. We had a pretty sizable first meeting at the district office. That's our first meeting. And we had Mr. Quesenberry, Ms. Roger, Mr. Buckman attend. It was a well-attended meeting, and the parents always, always give me great feedback. I will continue to bring them up to speed in the same way to ensure their feedback is met. These are just a few of the largest structures that happen in our district that reflect our level of engagement. In addition to our outreach every year to parents by way of survey, to staff, every single site we visit and gather staff feedback, as well as staff giving surveys, anonymous surveys to us. So we're pretty robust in our outreach efforts. Our feedback, our questions are becoming more refined. This is all part of the data analysis, that data-rich culture that is part of your board priority. And that way you understand
what's really happening, what is probably the most important thing to happen, so that when we adopt the LCAP, you know that what went into that is a whole lot of thinking, whole lot of analysis. Will it be perfect? No. Will it be better than it was the year before and more refined? I promise you that. And that's my presentation. I welcome any questions.
Anybody? Well, I'm excited, and I'm excited to see that this will be moving toward helping us develop our LCAP. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So we'll move on to our action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like an item pulled. Item 10.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 10.02, acceptance of donations.
Hold.
Okay. 10.03, approval of warrants and payroll. 10.04, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases.
Hold.
05, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 06, approve quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, the Williams settlement. And 10.07, proposed revisions to board policy 0415, equity, and I'm going to ask that that be pulled as well. Okay, so would someone like to make a motion to approve 10.01, 10.03, 10.05?
I'll move.
Okay. I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sheffer and a second by Mr. Quesenberry. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0. 10.02, Mr. Quisenberry.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to point out in the acceptance of donations, we have some various donations here. Some of them are from our PTAs. And, you know, the PTAs at all of our sites, especially at the elementary sites, raise tens of thousands of dollars so they can provide students and teachers with the things that they need. A lot of that money is raised for, you know, fifth or sixth grade excursions, and then a good deal of the money also can come to teachers through supplies for their classroom or for special projects that they want to do with their classes. And so my estimation, at least in going to two sites, anywhere from, you know, $45,000 a year to almost $90,000 a year is raised at some of our sites to enhance the students' learning and to provide help to the teachers.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yes. I move the item 10.02, the acceptance of donations.
I'll second that. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Mark, I think you pulled 10.04?
And I'm soft-spoken to begin with. So when we look at the purchase orders, I often try to lump things up and look and see what we're spending locally. So this last time, I just asked staff if they could see if they could come up with a rough number on what the purchases are, or roughly what the purchases are locally, so we get some kind of a number around what this district puts back into the community each month in terms of supporting our local businesses. So I don't.
Yeah, so Julie actually pulled this information for us. Julie's awesome, as I often tell the board, right, in terms of
thanks, Julie,
being able to do this to this, these types of things. But in September alone, just looking at our zip code, like our county zip code within our county, $2.4 million.
Wow.
And in terms of last year, 17-18, she pulled San Luis Obispo County. It was $9.8 million. Back to the local economy, and I will tell you that that really doesn't include a lot of our Measure D, because Acme, the parent company, is actually Modesto, right? So the money goes to them, but it gets dispersed out to all the local subs. So almost everybody at our sites, which would be approximately over the past 3 years, $50 million, is going back into the local economy through our local contractors that are helping with our project. So to answer your question, a lot of money is going back into our local economy.
And so that's great, and I really appreciate that information. I just want to point out that even I spend more time I buy some stuff from Amazon, and the district's making a choice, a conscious choice, I hope, to spend money locally. So thank you very much.
And that doesn't include the value of our payroll.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I think when we look at the contributions that the district makes, and economically, it's great for the county and the city and all of our areas. Of course, then culturally as well. So, Mr. Buckman, would you like to make a motion?
Sorry, I'd like to make a motion to approve item 10.04.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Quesenberry. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0. And I pulled 07 because I did receive a note from Marika Van Bearden, and I wanted to read that to the board because I think it's important. And so she says, on behalf of Mayor Heidi Harmon, we would like to thank the board for addressing student equity in this policy. In light of the bullying and gun violence events from last school year, it appears the board's taking steps to eradicate institutional bias from underserved and underrepresented groups. Please let us know if there's anything we can do to promote equity in the community. So thank you to them. And then I would move approval of item 10.07. Second, I made the motion. Mr. Buckman seconded it. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries 6-0. Is there any advanced agenda items? Okay. Reports by board members, 12.01. Mr. Quisenberry.
I have a list here, and I would like to defer to some of my colleagues on this. So, we did attend, I think it was on Tuesday night, a very fun event at the Monarch Grove Elementary, and I would like Mrs. Rogers to kind of tell us a little bit about that, and who was there, and how they looked.
Well, that was a literacy night at Monarch Grove, and the staff that was present was dressed in one-piece hamster costumes, as was the lovely Mrs. Shepherd to my right. And it was really a nice time. We met in the multipurpose room, and everybody sat on blankets on the floor, and there was a presentation about the book that the whole school is going to be reading this book and discussing it, Humphrey the Hamster. And it was just, you know, it was great. There was great family turnout. I was amazed. The multipurpose room was full. And so, yes, the three of us were there, as well as Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. So.
Yes, and then a lot of us, I don't remember who all was there, but we had on Monday the employee of the year, the employees of the year. So I just wanted to mention that they were feated, and what was really affirming to me was an affirmation for me was to see the videos of the classified employees and their impact on not only just their coworkers but on the children at all the school sites throughout the county. And then, of course, the teachers were also quite inspirational, and to hear from their colleagues also was wonderful. And our two employees were Emily Capilano from Baywood and Wendy Hall from Bishop's Peak. I did want to mention also that I got over to teach for a few minutes to talk with the students that were making their presentations on Native Americans and Native American culture is focused on California. And it was fascinating. The kids were very well versed. I talked to a young man. I'm going to get Saavedra, Josue Saavedra. And just to test out his bilingual skills, I asked him to make his presentation in Spanish, and he did quite well. And so that was really wonderful. For me, my older brother has been an attorney for California Indian Legal Services for decades. He's now out on his own. But to see and recognize some of the names of some of the indigenous tribes he's represented was very affirming, and also I had a little bit of information on some of the local tribes, but I learned an awful lot. So that was really wonderful. And I did want to mention one more thing. I don't want to take up all the time. Well, Tracy Nicholson, who was our bilingual aide at Morro Bay High and before that at Del Mar, retired. And it was so, she invited most of the staff at Morro Bay High School and some of the folks that she had worked with in the early 90s at Del Mar. And she made a tremendous contribution to the students in our district. She is responsible, in my opinion, for a lot of kids making it through high school. Her work in helping them in their classes, and whether it was integrated science or social studies class, was phenomenal, and I do want to recognize her for her wonderful work. Thank you.
Others. This is Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
Thank you. As I was driving back from Monarch Grove, I was thinking about the one school, one book idea, and just the concept of it is so enticing because you can imagine all the children on the playground. I mean, a sixth grader could go up to a first grader and start a conversation about Humphrey and what he was up to last night and what you read about. So it's an opportunity for connection as well as reading. And so I thought about, well, why not do it at home and require my two sons when they come home for holidays? We've all read the same book. We have something to talk about instead of going off with their own books. Oh, and I also just wanted to mention in regards to teach, receiving the distinguished or the Blue Ribbon School distinction. I believe this is their third time to have won that distinction. I don't think we mentioned that earlier, so I wanted to just put that out there as well. Congratulations to them.
Thank you. Mark.
Thanks, Chris. So I was lucky enough to be able to attend the Association of California School Administrators Equity Institute that was, I think, sponsored by our district, and there were people from all over the county there. It was excellent and will serve me well working on the equity committee. And we had our first meeting. I just want to thank Rick Mayfield. It was really well organized. I got to sit next to two Cal Poly professors, I think, and having that interaction between K-12, which I believe is driving the equity issue, and hearing their input as well, I think that's going to be a good bond here in the community. I don't know. I just want to take this opportunity to thank Dr. Prater because as I was reading last week some articles about early childhood education and what's been happening across the country, and I think it was either the New York Times, the LA Times, there was a number of states that have pre-K and TK, and it was several years ago when you worked with the board and you got us to... You presented the concept to us, and we approved it for transitional and pre-kindergarten. And we have it implemented, and the studies keep coming, and it's really nice that we're ahead of the curve yet again. So thanks.
Thank you. And Jim and I went to Los Osos Middle School for our boardwalk, and we both really appreciated the hospitality that was shown by the school and really just as always loved going out there and seeing all the grades. I was able to go over to Baywood and spend a little bit of time at Baywood and congratulate Mrs. Capilano on her accomplishment. And then as what happens to many of us, I was in the parking lot of the gym I go to now, and a parent who happened to be a teacher came up to me and started asking me about vaping and vaping in the schools and shared concerns about vaping. And I'm glad to hear, and I will report back to her, that our December study session will review the California Healthy Kids Survey. And at the November study session, we'll review the California Healthy Kids Survey. And at that time, that will be a topic that I think we'll be discussing. Thank you. Anybody, Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah. Just a quick note. I got a chance to go to the... Surf night at the Pizza Port Morro Bay. This is in support of the Morro Bay High School surf team, and I just wanted to thank Danny Fahey for his efforts in getting that rolling. And it was extremely crowded there, well supported. It took me like, you know, an hour to get my pizza. But it was fun. They did look like they did a wonderful job on the fundraising, you know, a lot of items for Sonnet Auction, a lot of prizes for the kids. Big turnout, kids of all ages. And I want to thank also Tim Cowan, who is the owner of Pizza Port, who promised a portion of the proceeds to go to support the Surf Club at Morro Bay High. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, they've been community supporters for a long time. So, Mrs. Roger.
Yeah, hi. I've been lots of places, and I'm not going to tell you where they are.
I will. Everyone.
I was at a lot of the things that were mentioned, including the Student Senate and the Boardwalk at Sensheimer. But what I did want to mention was at the end of last year, there was at a DLAC meeting, Aaron Black, who was then a vice principal at San Luis Obispo High School, gave a great presentation on vaping and all the many forms that it can take. And I wonder if, I know he's an elementary principal now, but they are a wealth of knowledge at SLO High just about all of that. And if somehow part of that presentation could be integrated into the study session for November. Was it November or October?
November.
It's,
In lieu of the Measure D study session dedicated in November, I think it's November 15th. In lieu of that, we'll have a board study session in here in J2. And what we'll do is we'll review the California Healthy Kids Survey, the Youth Truth Survey, year two, as well as discuss any other topics you'd like. And the vaping conversation will naturally come out of the Youth Truth and California Healthy Kids Survey data, so it's a natural link. So I would be more than thrilled to invite our secondary administrators who are on the front lines dealing with that.
He just was so knowledgeable, and I was really blown away by all the various forms that these vaping tools can take.
Yeah,
it was illuminating, and I think it would be illuminating as part of a study session.
I'll make sure we do that.
Thank you.
So I think that's it. We are adjourned until October 11th for our Measure D study session. So thank you all very much.